Boy, this is really a good turnout. Wow, it's really good to see this many people interested in some alternative visions on what's going on out here in this country. And what I want to talk about is how to get the word out, how alternative media and those with differing views can contest the dominant narrative that's operating everything in this country. Even before the kamikaze hijackings catapulted us into a new world, the U.S. media was heading in a new direction. We seem to be in the midst of some kind of paradigm shift in the way the media is produced, packaged, and broadcast, how it's doing that, how it's broadcasting information that formerly was known as news. Increasing numbers of news shops are beginning to wear their ideologies on their sleeves. They continue to give lip service to those cherished journalistic notions of objectivity and impartiality, but the actual news product is shot through with bias. Mind you, it was ever thus, but now many news organizations are less reverential about the dogma of objectivity. For this, we can thank right-wing media moguls like Rupert Murdoch, who was brought up in previous comments, Conrad Black, and Sun Myung Moon, who took over ailing U.S. publications, the New York Post, the Chicago Sun-Times, and the Washington Times, respectively, and transformed them into journalistic vehicles of ideological cant. The shift was accelerated by the 9/11 terrorism that has all but converted the major news media into warmongering organs of official propaganda. But this new posture was also on grand display during the controversies that surrounded the razor-thin 2000 presidential election. The mainstream media, with the notable exception, perhaps, of the New York Times and the Washington Post, resolutely ignored charges of vote suppression that were flying fast and furiously in Florida's black community. Insult recently was added to injury when the consortium of major U.S. news organizations first decided not to analyze and report the results of the audit they commissioned to identify who actually won. And then, when they did report the analysis, they buried the real story that Gore received the most votes. The right wing is in the saddle in the media, and they don't care who knows it these days. The undeclared war and the tactic of terrorism, this is an undeclared war on a tactic, provides patriotism as a pretext to further their rightward agenda. Right-wing patriotism police are everywhere, monitoring the levels of patriotic piety or the lack of such being publicly demonstrated. The Reverend Jesse Jackson, for example, was recently cited for not having a flag festooned outside his Southside home. He was also cited for telling an audience at the Harvard Law School that America should, quote, build bridges and relationships, not simply bombs and walls, unquote. Right? I don't see what's so subversive about that, but this last sighting was by a conservative group called the American Council of Trustees and Alumni, a group designed to roll back what they contend is the liberal contamination of academia. Perhaps because Americans are responding to the first attack on American soil since the Spanish-American War, they are more easily manipulated by forces that have much to gain by inflaming tribal chauvinism. External threats provoke the fascists in us all. After all, what is fascism but the notion of security run amok? If we arrive at a fascist state, we will be carried there on the wings of the right, which also gains from the current war fervor. The Ashcroft Police State Bill, sometimes laughingly called the USA Patriot Act of 2001, incidentally, that's an acronym for United in Strengthening America by providing appropriate tools required to intercept and obstruct terrorism. That's it. That's what it reads. USA Patriot is the acronym. Shall we say that's Exhibit A in the evidence proving how the right wing will take as much power as the rest of the society will allow it to grab. That bill is almost a refutation of the entire Bill of Rights that was added to the U.S. Constitution, the 10 Amendments. It's an onerous piece of legislation from its head to its feet, and some of the more vexing aspects of it are, one, it amends Fair Credit Reporting Act to require credit bureaus to reveal everything in a consumer's file to a government agency. It amends the General Education Provision and National Education Statistics Act to make schools hand over educational records to the Attorney General in a terrorism investigation or prosecution. It requires the Treasury Department to regulate the financial institution's identification process when people open accounts and to share that transaction, the records of that transaction, with any U.S. intelligence agency upon request. This is amazing. It permits voicemail and ISPs to make emergency disclosures to a governmental entity of customer electronic communications. The pretext for these extraordinary incursions into the private lives of citizens is the search for terrorists. Mind you, the definition of terrorism will be left in the right-wing hands of Attorney General John Ashcroft, who made his rep as a raging warrior of the Christian right. So we likely can expect the terrorist rubric to be stretched pretty wide, but not wide enough to include the domestic terrorists, like fugitive Eric Rudolph, who blew up abortion clinics and murdered, and those guys like him who murdered doctors who are willing to perform abortions, or terrorists like William Pierce, the author of many books advocating racist terror, including The Turner Diaries, a book many credit with inspiring Timothy McVeigh to bomb the Murrah Federal Building in Oklahoma City, and a book that serves as a terrorist handbook, cum manifesto, for neo-Nazi groups worldwide. Pierce lives publicly in Virginia. If Osama bin Laden can be blamed for committing terrorist acts through his anti-American ravings, then surely Pierce should bear some responsibility for the right-wing criminality and destruction that is being wrought by his acolytes. But that's a parallel the corporate media resist making. The media is particularly resistant to any notion that African Americans were themselves the victims of state terrorism for most of their history in this country, and therefore have a far more nuanced response to 9/11 than other Americans. African Americans are historical victims, not just of the explicit terrorism of racial violence vis-a-vis the Ku Klux Klan and various white citizens' council, but also the totalitarian terrorism of absolute subordination. Terror tactics were employed to dissuade enslaved Africans and their African-American progeny from any notion of a slave revolt. There are aspects of the slave experience that have been buried in U.S. history and must be excavated in order to prevent this nation from spiraling into tribal discord, but that's not very likely. The right gets particularly worked up by what it sees as notions of racial entitlement. They are adamantly convinced that much too much attention has been devoted to the various gripes of the ungrateful African-American masses. This attitude is nicely summed up in the coinage race fatigue. It has certain common features, including an aversion to the word racism and a reluctance to give credence to people who use the prism of race to analyze social policy. It is particularly contemptuous of the recently popular idea of reparations for racial slavery or any other kind of compensatory schemes. The 9/11 juggernaut did them a favor by knocking the once speeding reparations bandwagon right off the road. Does anyone remember the World Conference Against Racism? That concluded in Durban, South Africa, just days before 9/11. Well, this move away from discussion of race is just what the right has been pushing, and unfortunately, the media increasingly is accepting the message. Race fatigue is a trendy affliction. It's being modeled most prominently by the right-wing radio commentators and propagated most avidly by Murdoch's New York Post. But it's notoriously contagious, and much of the major media are now afflicted. The signs are everywhere. Wherever one looks these days, crucial racial issues are being ignored. Murdoch's News Corp also owns Fox News Channel, which has distinguished itself from its cable news competitors and won rating success, by the way, by flaunting a right-wing bias. The 2000 elections also helped showcase that bias when it was revealed that the news executive responsible for Fox News Channel's projection of a Bush victory was John Ellis, a cousin of the Bushes. After 9/11, Murdoch apparently sounded a reveille trumpet at Fox News headquarters, and all of the employees quickly fell in to enlist into the U.S. Armed Forces. On-air reporters and anchors are festooned with patriotic paraphernalia as they prompt bellicose warmongers to mouth off. A proud American flag forever waves in a perpetual tape loop at the corner of the screen. The station's ideological slant is so flagrant, yet it touts the mantra that it is fair and balanced. The deception is so obvious it has the look of a parody. But then you think, damn, these are the same folks who are running the country. Right now. And because of its clear bias, Fox Channel has become the darling of the right-wing Bushites. They link more stories to its reporters and are more accessible to its queries. This serves to give it more credibility than it deserves. Its brash attitude also has made the network a ratings winner, challenging the master CNN for news channel superiority. Naturally, higher ratings spawn imitations, so we're likely to see a further righting of cable news shows all around. Indeed, Walter Isaacson, the new CEO of CNN's news division of the massive AOL Time Warner, already has made efforts to beat Fox at his own game. He reportedly made an offer to Rush Limbaugh to join the network. Well, he made that offer before the famed talk show conservative tragically lost his hearing. Most recently, Isaacson told CNN reporters in Afghanistan to temper their reports of collateral damage from U.S. bombs with references to the WTC's tumbling towers. This, he explained, was so that no one would get the impression that CNN was pro-Taliban or anything like that. It seems clear from those instructions to his reporters that he is more interested in the presentation of CNN's image than he is in encouraging competent journalism. It's a real shame, a terrible shame to see CNN descend into the foxhole. But, but hey, that's your business. There are some who argue that television news, by its very nature, promotes a conservative worldview. With its one-dimensional messages and soundbite sensibility, it tends to reinforce and simplify and amplify the message of the right. At least that's the argument made by culture critic Jeffrey Shower in his excellent new book, The Soundbite Society, Television and the American Mind. Shower argues that daily journalism, especially electronic journalism, quote, has inclinations toward particularity, immediacy, and simplicity, unquote, which, he argues, also are the defining features of conservatism. The growing corporate control of all major media adds another level of difficulty to what already is an uphill battle for those fighting for media democracy. The constellation of forces arrayed against that fight seem daunting. Even the best of the nonprofit progressive media are being tugged by the toe of the marketplace. As Thomas Frank argues in his book, One Market Under God, the logic of the marketplace has ascended to religious heights. There can be no other God before it. Frank makes the sharp observation that a kind of market populism has become the new gauge of democracy, more democratic even than the ballot box. If people buy it, they're in effect voting for it with their hard-earned money, is how the argument goes. If it's profitable, it's good. In the post-9/11 environment, that impulse, too, has donned patriotic garb. We are told that we can aid the cause against terrorism by rampant consumerism. The nation needs consumers more than it needs citizens at this time of dire national need. If we don't buy something, the terrorists win, we are told. How more blatant can it be? When consumer activity is the highest form of citizenship, what does that say about the kind of society you have constructed? Hold that answer. Despite these bleak prospects for media democracy made considerably bleaker by 9/11, there is some hope that Americans are beginning to feel deprived of adult-like treatment by the news media. Requests for the less patronizing news provided by the BBC or even the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation are occurring at record rates, according to BBC and CBC officials. Several alternative political journals have reported a spike in their circulation and subscription responses. Even the chronically underappreciated journal for which I toil in these times has reported a spurt in interest, a small spurt, though. I would be very grateful to if those of you here increase that spurt by taking out a subscription. Some Americans apparently are feeling the pinch and are demanding change. The quest for corporate profit has sapped the budget of newsrooms around the country, and the war on terrorism offers a brief respite, but is not likely to alter the trend that overwhelmingly favors shareholders over informed citizens. But that profit mania, as Brother Ahmed pointed out, that profit mania is prompting some Americans to demand media be less beholden to corporate interests and become more informative and contextual. Alternative media is experiencing some notable growth in a few selected areas, and while those numbers may be small, they are growing. What's more, the internet provides a wealth of media outside the corporate nexus. Wall Street may have lost its irrational exuberance about the internet and its miraculous properties, but I haven't. From my perspective, it's still too good to be true. I'm waiting for somebody to come along and say, okay, time's up, no more access to international media. You can't go online now, forget it. But until that time comes, I recommend you use the internet to discover other news sources. They are numerous. And despite the limitations, the existing media still offers an opportunity to present alternative views. Progressive ideas make sense. That's why many of you believe them. If they make sense to you, they make sense to others as well. Our challenge is to present them to others in a palatable package. Barriers abound, the largest being the profit motive of the corporate media. But we really have no choice but to mount an assault on ideas, to mount an assault of ideas the best we can. And there are many strategies. Ironically, one of the best strategies is going back to the Western idea of a journalist as the impartial arbiter of varying truths. The serious practice of this kind of journalism could genuinely help facilitate the civil discourse necessary for pluralistic societies, for media democracy. Journalists learn quickly that one person's panacea could well be another's plague, and that truth is proximate. But the notion of proximate truth, or more acerbically, moral relativism, is anathema to those on the right, especially those who have beliefs in fundamental religious principles. That philosophical difference is the main reason that conservatives tend to characterize the media as liberal. In a sense, the right is right. The liberal impulse to interrogate received wisdom, be it sacred or secular, is also good journalism, at least journalism as an ideal. The journalistic forum is an ideal vehicle to explore and explode the biases that help reinforce racial hierarchy in our society. But journalism's most influential practitioners seldom explore those biases or the context out of which those biases emerge. Their economic well-being is rooted too deeply in the racial hierarchy that camouflage those biases. The primary burden of those seeking media democracy is to increase the diversity of voices that contextualize rather than atomize information. Media progressives must convince their shops it's in their best interest to tell mindful narratives that humanize rather than demonize, to frame stories based on knowledge rather than receive wisdom, to strenuously avoid the comforting grooves of bias, to be aware of the power and racial history of visual imagery. Resist at all costs the descent from skepticism into cynicism. Progressives of all occupations have a task to help Americans realize that we all benefit by removing bias filters from our common perceptions. Since the media, for the most part, frames our cultural environment, it is deeply implicated in our socialization process. Studies of media effects on violence are at best agnostic about causal relationships between media and violence, but studies have found that the media to be exceedingly influential in the formation of social attitudes and prejudices. So rather than devote too much attention on what may be the thin relationship between media and violence, we as a society should be much more attentive to the power of the media to help vanquish the other, whoever they may be. Instead, the media helps create a variety of others. The most virulent of that at this time is Osama bin Laden and his band, the 40 Thieves. Oh, oops, excuse me, wrong stereotype. I mean, bin Laden and his Al-Qaeda. That's them. Thank you.